Now, what can governments do around land use planning in response to the increasing population density in our growing capital cities?
Well, look, there's lots of reasons why more people are going to be living in cities in the future. What governments can do, and it's really in Australia, a combination of, you know, the state government and local governments, I think there's two things. One, we better have a conversation about how to achieve good density outcomes. I mean, the cities are going to have to become more compact, they're going to have to be denser, we're going to have to strengthen public transport, we're going to have to get rid of cars. So there's lots of things to do, but I think the key to it is engaging the community in a conversation about what good density can look like. You know, there's a lot of fear that we're going to turn into Shanghai or Singapore or Hong Kong or something that people don't seem to like the sound of, but what it means is that we have to deliver good quality design in terms of apartments. They have to be accessible. And another thing which I think we're increasingly aware of is that we have to think about things like really good open space with lots of different things to do in open space, because people will spend more time outside of their places. If more people are going to be living in apartments, we're going to have lots of activity outside, stuff for people of all ages, and we're going to really have to think through how to do open space well, among other things, I think.
Yes, it's really interesting. Now, rising rents and mortgages have coupled with stagnant wage growth has seen family budgets shrink. Now, the New South Wales government and the opposition have stated that they're going to drive down the cost of living. Yeah, what types of policies can they actually put in place to ease this pressure? Because I think one fundamental thing coming out of the census is that because our capital cities' populations are going up so quickly, cost of living and especially housing affordability in Sydney aren't issues that are going to go away anytime soon.
Look, they're not going to go away anytime soon. And despite, I think, a lot of talk from governments, all levels of government, about keeping the cost of living down, there aren't a lot of things governments can actually do. They can change what you think of as some of the levers. In terms of housing prices, not the only thing for sure, but one of the key things governments can do is to help remove some of the barriers to supply. So, you know, we know in Sydney, for example, we focus a lot on, you know, getting apartment approvals and larger, more stories in apartments and so on. But we can achieve about 30% of what we need in terms of housing supply in Sydney by just relieving the red tape around people putting a second or a third story on their existing dwelling. So, you know, the conversation gets focused, I guess, on particular things. But if you make it easier for people to put a second story addition, if you allow people, you know, easier and quicker ways, less expensive ways to strata existing dwellings, for example, you'll achieve a lot in supply, in terms of housing supply, and you won't necessarily change the character of existing neighbourhoods, you know, that want to remain, you know, single dwelling housing kind of neighbourhoods too much. But you've got to do things around supplementing public transport, because the cost of living for people really sits in the key areas of health, housing, education and transport. And if people are paying a lot of money on tolls, it's pretty easy for a lot of people to pay $20 a day on tolls if they drive into the city. That's a real cost of living issue.
Yes, and now, I mean, post-war baby boomers are, you know, a lot of the people have probably experienced Australia at that different time where, you know, housing was much more affordable. Now, those post-war baby boomers are starting to hit retirement age, and as such, Australia is facing an ageing population. What will it mean for health services that are really struggling to meet current demands?
Well, that is the big demographic issue, really. And, I mean, that's not just what we've seen in this census. We've been seeing it in a number of census now. But, yeah, the whole population's ageing. I mean, one of the things that changes that dynamic a bit is immigration, because immigrants are younger and so on. But, yeah, we are all ageing. In terms of what it means to health services, there's got to be much more focus on, in my view, on health prevention, keeping people healthy, dealing with things like the amount of exercise we get, obesity, smoking, all of those questions. And unfortunately, I think we've seen, particularly from the federal government, a reduction in emphasis on things like the anti-smoking programs. The funding into areas like obesity reduction has stalled. So I think one of the strategies to deal with the ageing population is to keep people healthy and moving, and to encourage that health prevention side. But you know, it is a significant challenge for the health budget that we're going to have such a big demographic bubble. The highest proportion of people will be over 65 in the next sort of 20 years period.
Yes, and one thing that I found really interesting, and a lot of people have been talking about, is the religion data that's come out where now 32% of Australians have said they identify as having no religion, making it the most popular single religion on its own. This is, I think, for a lot of people would think this is a big kind of moral or at least beliefs-wise shift in Australia. We've always had a predominant religion in Australia as one of the Christian sects. Do you think this says much about the changing values of Australia?
I find that this is a really interesting question. I don't know that we know really what it means. I think there's potentially a couple of things going on here. One, I think people who might have grown up as Catholics or Anglicans or whatever, who, you know, we know that participation in going to church, active participation in church services has been going down for years. But I think in previous census, people would have said, oh, they were a Catholic or they were an Anglican, because that's what they grew up as, even if they weren't actively participating in church services. So I think one of the issues is that people have changed the way they report. So instead of saying, I'm a Catholic because I went to Catholic schools and I grew up as a Catholic, I think in this census, what we saw is people saying, look, even though that was my family background, I'm not a practicing Catholic, so I've put no religion. So I think partly there's a reporting thing in there. I think the other thing is it doesn't mean that people are less interested in or have fewer value sets. We know from some of the research that we do that fairness and equity, you know, looking out for your neighbours, wanting to belong to communities, all of those things are persistently high in Australia. So it's in terms of that broader values position, I don't think it means that, you know, we're all going to become, you know, less pleasant people, or that reflects anything about people being less Christian in that more colloquial sense of the word. I think it just means people have decided to report, you know, what is actually the practical situation, and we've known that for a long time.
So we're not going to become godless heathen then, which is, I'm sure, reassuring for a lot of listeners that we won't descend into moral depravity or anything of the like. Now, obviously, one of the big talking points when the census actually happened was the census fail. The fact that people tried to go online to do their census for the first time ever in the history of the entire census conductions, that the website actually just crashed. Now, a lot of people, at the time, the ABS copped a lot of flack. A lot of the people who were in key roles also were, you know, people were calling for their resignations. How do you think this shift to digital has affected the data? Because overall, at the end, it did show that more people had completed the census than ever.
Look, it was rough, wasn't it? And people like you and I who were interested in census data went, oh, what's this going to mean? Panic, panic. Because we really do need people to fill out the census so that we can do the kind of planning and have the kinds of conversations about what's the future of Australia. Look, I think people, again, I think this is a values thing. I think people persisted with it despite the challenges at the time. People understand that it's important that we have this information for planning. And look, they did, the ABS, even, you know, the fact that people couldn't get on, the ABS persisted by, you know, knocking on the door, dropping off the forms, chasing people up. So they worked pretty hard in the face of that to make sure most of us filled out the census form. So I think it partly, again, reflects the commitment people have to knowing this is important for planning for our future.
Yes, well, full disclosure, and I suppose it maybe is a conflict of interest. I'm not sure. Well, I was a field officer for my local area in the census, and I enjoyed it quite a bit because I got to get in contact with a lot of people who I had no idea lived around my area, and it was I found it really eye-opening, to say the least. And but also, mind you, the job was probably made harder by the fact that the census did crash on the night of the matter. Now, it's been really interesting talking to you, Roberta. I just ask this as a final analysis. Do you think in the initial failures in terms of the digital side of the census, are we likely to see a repeat of that in 2021, or was 2016 the kind of the mistakes we had to make, if you will?
Look, I'd be surprised if we see it happen again. People will have learned a good deal around that, and you know, I think there's all sorts of things about spreading out the time that people have to fill it in and so on that I'm sure are lessons learned.
Indeed. Well, thank you very much for joining me.
Terrific pleasure.